Welcome to the instruction period. Today we come to the fourth foundation of mindfulness. On the first day we did the first foundation, mindfulness of the body and form, taking the breath as our object of mindfulness. At any stage during the retreat, feel free to come back to mindfulness of breathing, the simple bringing attention to the sensations that accompany each breath. It's a simple but profound method that has the capacity to take us to the seeing and knowing of freedom. The next of the foundations was feeling. Feelings are pleasant, unpleasant, or in between. And in the sutta, we are encouraged to cultivate joy and contentment, to turn the heart and mind to the noticing of that which is unproblematic. In the third foundation, which we did yesterday, we looked at mind and all that occurs in both the heart and mind. And again, the instruction is to sit with freedom, breathing in, liberating the heart and mind, breathing out, liberating the heart and mind. Because we have such a short retreat, what I'm giving you here is really just a taste of the breadth of the instructions. Please take up some of them and see what works for you. And sometimes you'll be quite surprised. Many people have reported, oh, I had such resistance to feeling joy. But there it is, it's a natural feeling that we can encounter, we can touch into. And joy, of course, is a path. The cultivation of joy is a path to liberation, and it's also the expression of the liberated heart-mind. And before we go on to the fourth foundation, I want to just to clarify something. I've had a number of questions about emotions that are seen as positive and emotions that are seen as negative, as in good and bad. And people have said, well, if you're inviting us to recognize the non-dual nature of reality without clinging anywhere, then why is it that when I talk, some emotions are seen as constructive and some are not? The Buddha called greed, hatred, and delusion the three poisons of the mind. So these emotions that we all experience, being caught up in anger, being caught up in our greed, being caught up in delusion, so not seeing clearly, these, in a sense, contaminate or pollute the mind even. They're poisons of the mind, and they're to be seen into. So what we do is we don't suppress them or pretend they don't exist. But our practice is one of deconstructing our anger, for example. It's seeing into it. We all know that anger is a broad word that covers all kinds of other things within us. Our disappointment, our vulnerability, our fear, our grief. So we need to look underneath and come to that, to see and know ourselves fully. Not just feel free to splash our anger around because we think it's a natural emotion. Because it doesn't feel good when we do that, and it certainly doesn't feel wonderful when somebody is angry with us. So yes, we do need to see, we do need to deconstruct the emotions that lead to suffering. So it's our clinging to them that takes us down the path of difficulty. That's the key issue. And so the Buddha says, okay, we see the I forms around the self. We see that there's strong feelings. Our thoughts and beliefs are added to the sensation. And we have this huge charge of emotional anger. We need to see it and know it, not just be pushed around by it. Because there's no freedom in that. The other way to discover and work with, or learn to be free from the difficult emotions of life, those that lead to suffering and sorrow for us and others, is to keep on turning the heart and mind towards the freedom itself. And when we do this, we don't fuel the anger, we don't fuel the negativity, we don't fuel the hatred, we don't fuel the resentment. And when it's no longer fueled, it subsides rather naturally. The same with fear. So this is the way. We see what's there, we don't deny it, but we deconstruct it, we see how it's formed, we see into it, and then we use those other qualities of our human heart, the capacity for compassion, for empathy, for listening, for understanding, for profound knowing, for joy, for love, for truth, beauty, all of those things. We use those qualities to help us understand, to help us through. And this is the practice. And it is truly not for the faint-hearted. It's, if we really want to see, we have to apply ourselves, and it will be difficult at times, as many of you have discovered. So that said, I hope that's clarified this issue of the dualities of good and bad, or pleasant or unpleasant emotions and feelings. So coming to the fourth foundation of mindfulness, which is mindfulness of the Dharma. The Dharma, of course, refers to not only all things in this life, but all teachings of awakening, and in this case, the Buddha's teachings. And in this section, there are four different contemplations or reflections. And the first is to contemplate impermanence. So, of course, the instruction is, I shall breathe in, contemplating impermanence. I shall breathe out, contemplating impermanence. So all conditioned things arise, stay and cease, end. Sorry? Okay? Yeah. Impermanence. So this is the contemplation. We see that all conditioned things begin and end. Our reflection, however, can take us even more deeply, because when we really see into the impermanent nature of all things, then something else is also revealed. We'll come to it, we'll do it in a moment. The next of the contemplations is, I shall breathe in, contemplating fading away. I shall breathe out, contemplating fading away. Now, this is not that we're suddenly going to disappear or become invisible. It is and refers to the fading away of our attachments, the fading away of the force of our desire, the fading away of our clinging, the fading away of our fear, the fading away of our anger, and so on. This is the kind of fading away that's being referred to. The next contemplation is an incredibly valuable contemplation. It's the contemplation of cessation or endings. So we contemplate the endings, the ending of this moment, the ending of the breath, the ending of this body, the ending of our life, the ending of our clinging, the ending of being caught up anywhere. So this is the contemplation of cessation. And of course, in the monasteries in Thailand, the monks sit in the morgue with the dead bodies and really contemplate the cessation, the ending of life. And the fourth in this section is, I shall breathe in, contemplating relinquishment. I shall breathe out, contemplating relinquishment. Relinquishment means to let go. Everybody understand? Okay. So we contemplate letting go. And hopefully we don't just contemplate it or think about it, we actually let go. So let's do the first one, which is the contemplation of impermanence. So again, just for a few minutes, breathing in, contemplating impermanence, breathing out, contemplating impermanence. So what did you discover? Did anybody have a direct experience of the impermanent nature of things? Yes, come.
Situation where my boss was shouting at me.
Yes.
And was unjustified, of course.
Of course.
And anger was coming up.
Yes.
And then I said to myself, my boss shouted me is past. I mean, it's already dead.
Yes.
And so, anger, why should I cling to it?
Yes.
So I let it go.
Yes.
That was...
Fantastic. In 3 minutes, the resolution of conflict at work. This is how we do it. So when the anger subsided, in that moment of the subsiding of the anger, because you saw the futility of it, given that the situation has already passed, it's ended, it's finished, you saw the futility of the reactivity, the anger ceased, and then what?
Fade away.
Yes.
It just was immediate relaxation. Immediate.
Yes.
Let go.
So we immediately let go into relaxation. It's a wonderful, wonderful skill to learn, because so often we need to utilize just that skill in our interactions with others. Thank you. Anybody else a contemplation on impermanence? Yes.
What if?
Just the experience from
I
the.
I found out.
Yeah.
That I cannot know anything.
Okay.
Anything.
Okay.
Not knowing.
Yes. Okay. So you sat there and you realized the one who knows and likes to know everything is empty. Does not exist, actually. It's formed together. We form this sense of me who is the knower of things. And then when we see the end of that, we can just sit in not knowing, not holding to anything.
And the things are also empty.
Yes, and the objects of the world are also empty, meaning empty of self-existence. I'll talk about this later today. Thank you. Yes, at the back.
So I thought about not finding my water bottle.
Yes.
A few days ago.
Yeah.
And it kind of threw me off when it happened. I don't know exactly.
So it was your water bottle.
Yeah, and it was gone somehow. It was very difficult.
Yes.
Like, it was funny, but it was difficult for me.
Yes.
And And when we thought about impermanence, I was like, oh, it's impermanent. Like
yes.
The water bottle. Like, okay.
Yes.
But then I cling to it again.
Yes.
Like, oh, but I like it so much. Like,
yes.
My favorite water bottle.
It's my favorite water bottle. The best water bottle ever.
Yeah, I bought it 3 months ago and I always, yeah.
Yes. Did you say you read about it?
No, I bought it.
Oh, you bought it.
Especially this one.
Oh.
Yeah.
All that planning that went into bringing the water bottle. Okay, so you...
It was like but it's interesting that I came back to the clinging.
Yes.
Like I thought about the impermanence and then I was, but
okay.
I want it.
Yes. Okay, so this is well seen. So we see the impermanence, we let go for a second, and then the habitual mind comes back again and says, but I want it, it's mine. Doesn't it?
Yeah. It happens to me with a lot of things.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly.
That's the first thing.
So, over and over again, we need to let go of our attachments. So we need to see, there I am clinging to the impermanent, wanting to make it permanent, wanting to make it mine, wanting to have, wanting to possess, wanting to own. This is the construction of self and desire and clinging. And when we just see the impermanent nature of things, it brings a lovely release. Thank you. One more. Oh, there's so many more. Yes.
It's okay if I say an
apple? No. Yes, but you need to come up here and use the microphone. And someone needs to translate. Okay.
Sorry. You say to everyone.
Hi.
You need to.
Yeah, I'll speak to you. Whatever she said.
I saw many castles in the sand.
Each wave was washing over them? One by one?
Each wave was washing over them one by one.
Beautiful castles that children built and they were melting down.
The beautiful castles that children had built and they were melting down.
Slightly creepy. After some moment I saw people and children washed into the sea.
Oh, slightly creepy, did you
say?
Okay. After some moments, I saw people and children washed into the sea. Okay.
I can't say anything.
Yeah. Okay.
Can we start from the top?
Can.
Castles and then people washed.
Yes. So first the castles washed into the sea and then the people.
A moment later, an image came up of her grandfather that recently died, and he also went into the sea.
A moment later, an image came up of her grandfather who had recently died, and he also went into the sea. Next. And then what? Okay, so you saw the impermanent nature of the sandcastle, of everything that we build and construct, no matter how beautiful it is, even if it's made by a child and it's exquisite. the ocean of time washes away all that we put together. No matter how strong, no matter how big, every single thing is impermanent. And then, of course, even we are impermanent. Your grandfather also gone into the great ocean. So this is impermanence. This life itself will come to an end. All that we have ever known as self will end.
It's actually, I remember it started with a painting I paint.
Yes.
And when I think about to give it away, it's really out to me, like to give a gift or to.
Yes.
And I thought about like art that disappeared, like just. Like ruined or
yes,
and then it came all the
yes.
Other.
Yes, so the art as well disappears, everything. So, all conditioned things end and cease. What was the feeling you were left with, or the knowing you were left with at the end of this vision of the washing away of all things, all life even?
Actually, I kind of think ran away from it.
Yes.
I saw it, and then I don't know what happened. I just stopped.
Yes. So, was there some fear that came?
Yeah, I guess.
Yes, exactly. So then the I comes, and says, "I'm afraid. I'm afraid of death. I don't want to end." And of course, the I doesn't want to end. But liberation is not personal. You see. It's not the I that becomes free, it's the freedom that is. And so when we're no longer restricted by the self, which is impermanent, which is formed, which is constructed, when we don't see from within that limitation, we get a sense of something more. This is to be seen. So, all things are impermanent. Every object, everything, every single person here, all things, it's a tough truth. But we are all born, so therefore we all die. There is no escape. So it's tough to see, but that's not the end of the insights we can have about impermanence. There is more, so have courage. The fear too will die. It is also empty of self-existence. It's just fear. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, at the back there, on the side. Yes.
I saw my fears of being lonely.
Yes.
This is very, very much appear in my relationships.
Yes. So there's the fear of loneliness. So in the sitting, how did that appear to you?
In the stomach.
Yes.
Fear.
Yes. So there's the fear. Sensations are impermanent, aren't they? The end. Yes. The sensations end, and with it, the sense of self, and with it, the loneliness. We can see this. So, the sensation ended. Then what? You didn't get there. Okay, you didn't get that far. Okay. So, when we're sitting, we reflect on impermanence. And then we see, oh, I am lonely. And this sense of loneliness doesn't seem to be very impermanent, does it? it seems to flood through our whole life and colour and shape our whole life. So we need to look really carefully. We need to look at, yeah, you got it. You understand it. We need to look and say, okay, sometimes I feel alone or lonely. Can I change the conditions of my life?
I'm lonely, still not death.
I'm lonely once?
When I'm lonely,
yeah.
I'm still alive.
Yes, yes, you're alive, of course. We hope. So, the feeling is I am lonely, or the view about yourself is I am lonely. It's held in place by this sense of separation. Okay, so that's what you need to investigate.
Mm-hmm.
Am I separate from everything? Okay. Yes. So right now we're just seeing what comes up when we reflect on impermanence, and then hopefully we see that our thoughts are impermanent. Our views, even the view I am lonely, is impermanent. Yes, it's not fixed. It will end. So trust the practice, stay with the sensations, keep exploring, and you will see the impermanent nature of loneliness. Thank you. So you see, our feelings are impermanent. Our thoughts are impermanent. Our beliefs about ourselves, our views of ourselves are also impermanent. Our emotional world is impermanent. This body, this very life. So this reflection can lead to a rather profound and deep understanding, because in life, a lot of our suffering comes from clinging to the impermanent in the hope that it's permanent. We don't see what we're doing, but we hold on, we try to hold on to that which is passing, that which is fleeting, that which is bound to end. We try to hold on to it as our own for some kind of sense of security. There is no security to be found there whatsoever. And we have to know and understand this deeply and just see it directly. That is not where security is found. Let's do the next one. The next one is, I shall breathe in, fading away. I shall breathe out, fading away. And just really see what happens in the sitting itself, in the experience, with the experience. I shall breathe in, fading away. I shall breathe out, fading away. So what did you discover? Did anybody get a sense of the fading away? Yes, come.
So I'm not really got it, like fading away, but what I did, I sort of had the image of I'm becoming transparent.
Yes.
And there's only the breath hanging in the air, like my lungs keep hanging where I left them.
Yes.
And I'm transparent and disappearing.
Yes.
While I'm leaving the breath in the place.
Yes. So the symbolism of this image is what? Yeah, there's just the breath coming and going.
Yes.
The breath is impermanent. This body, the transparency that you experienced, is a sign or signal, isn't it, that this body itself is insubstantial, not solid, perhaps not as solid as we might conventionally believe. We can have the direct experience of the dissolution of the body. So what does that tell you? What does that signify? It's a hard question, but we need to understand, because we sit there, we have this great perception that shifted to just the lungs, the in and the out, and the in and the out, and the disappearing body. What does it tell you? What is it showing you?
That maybe, I mean, I've thought about it now, maybe time exists and it's not dependent on me.
Time exists?
Yeah.
Ah, yes. Well, time is a construct, isn't it?
I guess.
Yes. And are we caught up in time or not?
I'm not sure.
Okay. So here's an investigation for you, isn't it? We've seen the fading away of what I see as my body, what I know as this body. We see that here and now we can unhook ourselves, if you like, from the identification with the body. And then what does that show us? And you said something about time. These cells of the body are bound in time. They will die. Yet what? Can we know the timeless right now?
Yeah, I think I have to think about that.
Yes, you do. Okay, this is your contemplation, this is your reflection. And this is how we work with inquiry. This is how we work with our experiences. We don't just say, oh, that was a cute experience. I'd like that again. Mm-hmm. Well, we say, oh, what's it telling me? What's the significance of it? How can I see more about this? How can I explore? What is it revealing? This is the way. Somebody else, fading away. Yes.
Psychology teacher.
Yes.
And I teach my pupils positive psychology.
Okay.
That is my being. I'm kind, and I'm teaching to be kind, and I'm getting a kindness back.
Yes.
So I'm, most of the time, I'm full of joy and happiness.
So in the meditation just then, what occurred?
In the previous meditation, when we were supposed to let go, so I let go of the joy.
I guess.
Happiness.
Of course, we can cling to happiness as much as anything else. Okay, and then what happened?
I started crying.
Yes.
And I was washed by sadness and
yes.
loneliness.
Ah.
It still sits heavy.
Yes, yes, I can see.
So, and the second one, then, when we were supposed to fade away.
Yes.
All the sadness just left and I
yes.
became empty.
Yes. Bravo.
And immediately, your smiling face immediately filled me back with joy again.
Okay.
You know, Rada in Russian mean happy.
Oh, does it? There you go. All right. So, we can cling to the pleasant and the beautiful and the fine and the joyous, and we can cling to the sad. Our practice of impermanence and of fading away brings release from all clinging. And then when we let go of our happiness or joy, we let go of our sadness, then what?
I become happy.
Yeah. Is it a happiness, though? Can we touch into a happiness that can never be lost?
Could you repeat it, please?
Yeah, okay. Sometimes we have the understanding that our feeling and emotional world shifts and changes, sometimes happy, sometimes sad. Yet, when we are really with that, we release our clinging to joy, we release our clinging to sadness, there can be what you described as, I am just empty. But it's not empty in a bad way, like we're vacuous and lonely. It's just the emptiness of self, and it's the emptiness of all clinging. And that emptiness reveals our natural state of the heart and mind. Got it? So, the emptiness, if we just sit in that emptiness, you said, and then you just looked up to the front. There I was smiling and you were fine. But can you touch into that smile in your own heart?
I think so.
Yes. He said, I think so. That's the practice.
I would know the difficulties getting in touch with my happy feelings.
Yes.
Having difficulties having... Feeling bad.
Yes. So we are very gentle and tender and we work in the way that we've described. We stay with the sensations until they fade and end. And with that ending, there is a release that comes. Trust it. Track it. Follow it. See for yourself. Thank you. So this is the way we work with contemplation of the Dharma, contemplation of the teachings. And of course, there are many teachings that we can take up. And tomorrow we'll continue with the last two of the contemplations and reflections. So there's much encouragement from me to really be with your direct experience without clinging, and then see what's revealed for yourself. If you do that, the insights will start to come. And then we see and understand this unfolding nature, and then we see that which is already free. We appreciate or know the heart in its natural radiance, the heart that's unpolluted or uncontaminated by our greed, our hatred, our delusion, and our clinging to it. It takes a kind of sharpness of mind, actually. So this is not a teaching of all love and happiness. It's a wisdom teaching. And so we have to be alert, awake, and we see when the eye grips and clings, and we go, ah, I see you. I see you. Yes, I see what's happening. And then let it go. This is the practice, over and over and over again. So thank you very much for listening, and thank you to those who shared. We learn from one another, we explore together. Thank you. Now there's walking meditation, and I think some interviews with teachers.